This week we're exploring secular spirituality, either as an added layer to a religious faith or a yearning for a deep connection with humanity outside of an organized religion, through meditation, a connection with nature, a community, or books. When people have questions like, how can I be a better person, parent, partner, literature often lays out a path. So we've brought in author and editor Will Schwalbe, whose books include The End of Your Life Book Club, the books he read with his mother at the end of her life, and also Books for the Living, the roles books play in our lives. He joins us from New York. Will, welcome back.
Thank you, Robin. Thank you for having me back on.
Well, thanks for helping us with this, because it's kind of like, you know, embracing a cloud. So what does secular spirituality, first of all, mean to you?
When I hear the phrase secular spirituality, what I think of is outside the confines of any one religion or faith and outside the walls of a church or a temple or a mosque. They're the things that help us live life with more meaning, with more purpose.
Yeah.
And the kind of touchstones that we can come back to throughout a day, a week, a month, a year, and a life, and sort of say, if I follow these precepts, if I try to attain these goals, then my life will have had some meaning, some
right.
purpose.
Let's just get started with one of yours. The title kind of says it all, The Importance of Living, Lin Yutang.
Well, I'm obsessed with The Importance of Living by Lin Yutang. And if I had a secular Bible, it would be this one book. And this book was written and published in the late 1930s. It was a massive bestseller. It was read by people all over the world. The Importance of Living is an attempt to explain the Chinese way of life to people in other countries and a kind of Chinese philosophical way of life. And Lin Yutang calls it the noble art of leaving things undone.
Huh.
And in this book, he makes a really stirring case that whereas most of us live to work, what we really should be doing is working to live. And he talks about the joys of lying in bed and looking out the window and having meals with friends and drinking tea. And for a while, when you read this book, Robin, you think, oh, well, this is sort of silly and maybe a little twee and charming and digressive. But then what you remember is he wrote this book in the late 30s. And as the book proceeds, he starts to talk by name about Stalin and Hitler and the rise of fascism. And what you really see that he's doing is positing humanistic values as a kind of secular religion and as our strongest bulwark against the forces of tyranny.
I mean, just give us one more sentence on that. I mean, you say he would write about revering inaction as much as action. Enjoy life's simple pleasures. How else would that offset what was going on in the world at that time?
I love this phrase. He calls it the three American vices: efficiency, punctuality, and the desire for success. And he says all of Americans' unhappiness comes from these three American vices. And again, that's one of those things where you think, well, you know, that's a sort of charming thing to say. But what he really means is this need, this human need to go for power. This human need to accumulate goods, these forces of greed are the things that we need to resist in life. And that's why this book, it really is a secular Bible for people looking for a road that is not the road of greed and ambition.
Boy, and I can't imagine, I'm going to read it now. That was in the 1930s. Now you've got so much more consumerism, you know, smartphones. It'll be interesting to read it today. We'll have, again, the list at herenow.org, but you've got Stuart Little by E.B. White. This is no ordinary mouse, born to a family of humans. He lives in New York with his family. I'm going to note as well that there's another list. Carol Kuravilla, who is a religion writer for the Huffington Post, put together a list as well, and it included The Little Prince. So there's books that might appear to be for children, but they're not.
Yes. And children are a tough audience, and these classic books that were written for children, children of all ages, often have very profound wisdoms in them that you can use to guide you throughout your life. So for me, Stuart Little has two really important messages. One is really about radical acceptance. Here's a human family that has a mouse as their child, but the mouse, Stuart, has the full love of his family. And to me, that says, you know, we can include people in our families who are totally different from us. But it's also really, for me, the ending. because it has what I think is one of the most beautiful endings in all of literature, as Stuart goes to find his friend Margalow, a bird, and you don't actually know at the end of the book whether he's ever going to find Margalow. Librarians were furious, some of them, with E.B. White, and they said, how can you do that to children? How can you leave them hanging at the end of a book? And E.B. White's philosophy on it was, children, in fact, everybody needs to know that what's important is the questing and the searching and going after something that's meaningful for you, not whether you actually find it. I love that the other list brought up The Little Prince, because I do think one of the things that traditional religious books do for us is help us understand loss and help us with grief. And The Little Prince, for me, is a gorgeous book about how people can live on in your memory even when they're gone from this earth. Mm-hmm. And it's a book that's helped me over the course of my lifetime deal with grief.
Yeah. By Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. Again, we'll have it as part of our list at herenow.org. The next book, Wonder by R.J. Palacio. This is fiction. August Pullman is the character born with a facial difference. Now it's fifth grade, and he's going to be going to school, and his classmates can't get past his face. Wonder was a number one New York Times bestseller, the favorite book of one of our favorite people, Emily Bazelon, a writer at the New York Times, also author of a book about bullying. She says it was the best kids' book of the year. Why?
If there was a book that I would have every single person in America read, I might even expand that to the world, it would be Wonder, because at the heart of it is a very simple message, which is choose kindness. But not just choose kindness, choose to be kinder than is necessary. Mm-hmm. And that is, such a powerful life philosophy that in every situation in this book, you see some characters who go out of their way to be kind. And you get to model your behavior after them and see what that looks like in the world.
It's a muscle. I'm sure others have, caught themselves saying, wait a second, I'm not being my best person. I am going to, almost like exercising, I'm going to exercise this muscle of kindness. I want to go back to some older books. Bartleby the Scrivener, Melville, this is the clerk who obstinately refuses to go on doing the sort of writing demanded of him. How does this fit into spirituality?
Bartleby has this great phrase, I would prefer not to. And when he's asked to do things he doesn't want to do, he just says, I would prefer not to. And to me, in our culture, there's this never give up, never give in spirit. But I really think that one of the things we need to remind ourselves of is we have the power as individuals to step away, and that sometimes quitting is the noblest and best course. And sometimes it's the only course that we have left. The Christian New Testament is filled with stories of refusal. And I think there's a wonderful religious tradition in other religions of stories of refusal. And to me, this is the great secular story of refusal.
Bartleby the Scrivener. I so love that you included the African-American author Edna Lewis and The Taste of Country Cooking. She's writing about the country cooking she grew up with and, this small Virginia farming community. But it's so much more than that.
It's so much more, this book. It's really a beautiful reflection on so many things. One of them is gratitude, and keeping in mind that when we sit down, give us this day our daily bread, someone produced that. There are farmers. There are people who brought it to us. It's gratitude for other things as well. She grew up in the town of Freetown, Virginia, which was founded by her grandparents and their friends who had been enslaved people. It's gratitude for how far we've come. But it's also, which I think the great works of secular literature do, remind us how far we have to go. There's also just such marvelous descriptions, too. She talks about the joys of a fruit tree. It's only there because your parents or grandparents planted it so that the descendants would have fruit. Mm. The choices we make today carry on for generations to come.
Will Schwalbe's been giving us his list of books that might help you form your own secular spirituality, whatever that is. Will, another one of your books, A Better Man by Louise Penny, that's the novel. Other lists, and we've been mentioning a Huffington Post list, include Mother Night, Kurt Vonnegut. And I'd like to recommend the book on taboo against knowing who you are, Alan Watts. This was the hugely popular 1966 book. Some credit it with starting the craze for yoga and meditation in the West. And he writes, Will, about how people tend to think of themselves as individuals, which there is some truth to that. But in fact, we're really not at all. We have to think of ourselves as waves in the sea. We just are wave after wave of individuals that are part of this bigger ecosystem.
And actually, just the very act of reading, no matter what you read, connects you to everybody else who has ever read that book and everybody else who will ever read that book. So I love the idea of considering yourself part of a wave or not alone. And books connect you to other people.
There you go. Will Schwalbe, author, editor himself. Will, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Robin.